Welcome. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show, and today I'm very pleased to have as my guest Suzanne Sherlock-Durana, whose book, Full Body Presence, Learning to Listen to Your Body's Wisdom, is good advice for any of us that may have any of the stress that life throws at us. And we'll be talking about how important it is to become aware of that through listening to your body and feeling within your body. Suzanne is a certified instructor of craniosacral therapy and somano-emotional release with the Upledger Institute, and she has developed Healing from the Core curriculum, which also has an audio series, and she teaches these curriculums internationally. I believe she's at Big Sur teaching now. Is that right, Suzanne?
That's right.
Great. Well, that takes you to all sorts of wonderful places.
It does.
Peaceful places.
Yes.
Are you still living in Reston, Virginia?
I am.
Right.
I try not to live there in the summertime, if at all possible, because of how hot and sticky it is.
Exactly.
Big Sur is much cooler.
Yes, it is. Well, thank you for joining us today. You want to give our listeners a little bit of information about how you became aware of the importance for full body presence and the and your Healing from the Core curriculum.
Yeah, as an instructor of craniosacral therapy, I was watching my students as they went through the curriculum, because craniosacral therapy is a very light touch. It's also a touch that listens to the body very intimately. Really, someone might put their hands on your head or your chest or your belly and might be there for some time. So it's a very connected, intimate touch, and not a sexual touch, but a very intimate touch. And what I was discovering was that the doctors, nurses, massage therapists, physical therapists who were doing cranial work didn't know how to handle the energetic dynamic that was going on between themselves and the person that they were holding. People that come and really love craniosacral therapy are generally people who have a lot of caring, but also a lot of sensitivity. And what I was seeing was that they were starting to burn out. Like, they would say, oh, God, I did this great session for this person that had a serious headache, and it was such a sad story. And when they left the office, they felt wonderful, but I had a headache.
Yeah, really.
Or, you know, I'd get a therapist after I'd taught them their first level, and back in the third level, they'd walk in and say, God, I'm loving this, but I'm so exhausted at the end of the day. What am I doing wrong? And so that's actually where I began. And I began gathering a lot of the skills that I had from all the different disciplines that I had studied and put together this curriculum that helped the practitioners to have a healthy connection and a healthy boundary from the people they were working on. So they could feel deeply connected, but they could also have a boundary from what wasn't theirs and what they didn't need. And also to help them recognize when they were depleted and when they were full, and give them a set of skills for how to refill if they were depleted. So that's really where I began, was with healthcare. It was interesting, though, because within a couple of years, all these lay people started coming into my classes, people that weren't healthcare people at all, mothers, artists, coaches, psychotherapists, ministers, you know, parents of, you know, all parents, but particularly parents of special needs children, people that have are caregivers in their life, although not professionally. And I began to realize that what I was teaching these healthcare people was applicable to the entire population, and it was very important information to have. And it has become more so as the stress in our environment has increased.
Yeah. I had the opportunity to teach medical students at Emory for a few years, and I had to teach them something similar, and I used the dowsing rods to help teach, because your energy field, the state of openness of your energy field is reflected in the rods.
Right.
And so I told them that if they were open, if they were closed, then and the rods were crossed, then no healing would exchange. If they were too open, then they would get the headache or they would get the energy depletion, because they were often giving their own energy until we taught them not to.
Right.
But that when the rods were straight, in other words, the energy was coming through them to the patient, that they would be much better off. And they could actually see with the rods what they were. Because, you know, as you know, sometimes we, especially as medical students and other high stress professionals, we shut down the full body presence just
Absolutely.
Because
Absolutely.
We have to. I mean, it's not something we choose to do. It just occurs automatically, probably as a protective device. But
you know, I'm sure it is.
Opening
yeah.
it back up. Well, I mean, in certain situations, I mean, you don't want to be fully open when you're in a situation where somebody could take all of your energy at once, like
mm-hmm.
surgery, someone who's dying. And I've seen that happen. I've seen grown men who were very, very strong almost fall over because they gave all their energy to somebody who was dying and didn't realize they were doing it. It's
right.
very interesting.
Right. And if they don't understand the dynamic of how energy flows through the body and the dynamic of being able to connect to external resources that are unconditional,
mm-hmm.
you do see that kind of thing. I actually saw exactly what you're saying. I was teaching a class of cranial 2 students, and they were just teaching them how to feel the cranial rhythm, which is a really subtle movement in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And the person lying down on the table was a Qigong master. And he was a doctor of chiropractic, but he was a really just charged, full person.
Mm-hmm.
And this woman who was, I don't remember what she was as a medical professional. She was either a medical doctor or also a chiropractor. And she was standing at his feet.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked across the room, and I looked at her, and her eyes started to roll back in her head.
Right.
And I thought, oh, she's going down. And all I could do, I was too far away, I just went, feel your feet.
Right.
And you could see her system. It took about a nanosecond. She must have been a medical doctor. She was so fast. At just a nanosecond, and you could feel her drop her awareness into her feet, and her eyes came back, and she stood up, and she was okay. She didn't fall over. But that quality of knowing how to connect to an external source, once she was feeling her feet on the ground and she'd gotten her connection back to the earth, he wasn't going to drain her.
Right.
Because she was connected. It was going to come through her at a fast rate, but it wasn't going to make her pass out. So there are two or three basic skill levels that I teach that are pretty important. The two medical doctors that I have that are in the upper levels of my training tell me that one of the things they've learned from me is how to have a healthy connection.
Right. Yeah.
He said, you're teaching everybody to have healthy boundaries. You have to teach us as medical doctors how to have a healthy connection because it gets almost beaten out of us with the hours and the stress of our training.
And we
can't connect. We don't. There's no time. There's not enough energy. Right. And no one teaches us how to do that.
And an unhealthy connection creates that syndrome that medical students get where they get everything that they're studying.
Exactly.
We were talking about that in surgery yesterday. And and actually, you know, it's funny because I really do believe they develop the symptoms. I mean, it is so, because you're concentrating on the patient with the disease and you hadn't seen it before. And so you're open to it because you're trying to learn it.
Yep.
And I'm not saying you always get the disease, but you get the symptoms, which is fascinating.
Yeah. Well, and I think that if, see, my particular, like my basic level of what I teach people is, the first thing you want to do is put your own oxygen mask on first.
Right, yeah.
So the first thing I teach people when they come in the door is how to make a safe, unconditional connection with the external resources that are around us. We all have internal resources. Things we know that we do well, strengths that we have. But I teach people how to feel their feet on the planet Earth, you know, on the ground, and how to draw energy, how to soak it up from the Earth's energy field. Then I teach them how to use air, how to breathe in a way that fills them up also, so that their container is full. And I think of the human body as a river with boundaries. And when we are doing really well, our river has nice, solid boundaries, but there is a flow moving through us all the time that if our container stays full, it doesn't allow for us to pick things up. Or if we do, it's a very temporary phenomenon that quickly can pass. But that quality of being able to fill the container of your being is like my core level of training. You have to know how to fill up before we can go any further. Because if you're not full, just by the laws of physics, you're going to start as a vacuum. You're going to start to pull in. If you're empathetic, you're going to start to pull in, if you care, what the people around you are feeling.
Right,
that's
right.
And so that's true for, I mean, think about the people this is true for. I mean, obviously, doctors, nurses, massage therapists, physical therapists, but parents of special needs children.
Right.
People caring for dying, aging parents.
Mm-hmm.
People that are in healing professions where people are pulling on their energy all the time because of the role they've agreed to take on. Ministers, coaches, psychotherapists, teachers.
And if people don't believe this, have them think back to when a parent or a loved one died that was connected to you. Oftentimes, you get a huge burst of energy once they die. It's like I noticed that with my mother and myself when my father died. It's like the next day we felt much better. And you know, but most people aren't aware. I was aware I was giving him my energy because of course you know I felt the connection, but she wasn't. She didn't realize it. But it's really true because all of a sudden you have a lot more energy after they pass, which is evidence that you were giving them energy.
Right. And the other thing that I see when someone's dying, and this is a little more esoteric, but it, oftentimes if you really love someone and you do have a capacity to track where they are and what's happening, there is a quality where you start to leave with them. Just a little bit. And so one of the things I teach my students, if you are at the bedside of someone who's in the dying process, put your roots down deep.
Right, so you don't go out with them.
Deep. Put your roots down really, 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 really deeply so that you don't get drained as you're sitting at the bedside. And then there will naturally, I mean, they have to continually put them down, 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 and continually remember to do that. Because the natural phenomenon, as you're saying, you notice, is to start to help them move over through the other side, you know, and on out.
It's a very interesting process. I had read Cindy Dale's Illuminating the Afterlife, and it had her on my show, and I think we really need to teach a lot more about what occurs at during the dying process.
Yeah.
Because it really starts, she says, 7 or 8 years prior, if it's going to be a natural death, you know, not a sudden death. And then there's a whole bunch of things that I've seen that a lot of people who develop cancer, one of their goals is to overcome the fear of death. So therefore, they have time to do so, which is very interesting. So it's just very interesting. Versus someone who's, say, killed in a car accident, which you don't have too much time to consider it then.
Right. But what is interesting is sometimes even with traumatic death, if the person is really empathetic, they do have an intuitive. They do have a sense that something's coming. They don't know what.
Oh, yeah. No, as a surgeon, I can tell you that a lot of most surgeons I know, if a patient tells them in the pre-op area that they think they're going to die in surgery, they often cancel the case. And it's funny because they'll do it later. I mean, oftentimes you can do the case later. Mm-hmm. It's just that little window of, you know, that might be a bad time to have surgery.
A bad time for them, a bad time for the surgeon. We don't know what it is, but the person gets a real hit.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
you know,
it's best to listen to that. And my anesthesiologists talk about that, too, that they don't mind canceling the case. We're not talking about somebody who's fear-based and is just afraid of every little thing.
Right.
We're talking about someone who just has a deep feeling that they aren't going to make it through.
Right.
Because, you know, who better than them to tap into that, you know? I mean,
well, that's exactly right. Full body presence, learning to listen to your body's wisdom. And there's a very, you're exactly right, and you bring up a really interesting thing, which is that there is a felt sense difference, a significant difference, between that gut knowing that something is coming and the chatter, anxiety, worry of the mind.
It has nothing to do with
your gut knowing.
Yeah, that's true.
And
you know, most of my patients are fairly evolved. So they don't have a lot of the, you know, just the anxiety, fear. But it's interesting. I take care of a lot of patients with infected breast implants. And if they have a lot of mold, they have that anxiety going on, mm-hmm. just as part of the neurotransmitter depletion.
Right.
And it actually goes away once you treat detox biotoxins, get the mold out of the body. But still, there is that other there that is mm-hmm. more intuitive, because usually they got to me through their intuition. You know,
yeah.
they, I'm kind of hard to find, even though I have a book out. It's not, you know, real not. There's not a lot of knowledge out there that's out there. So they have to find me by either their intuition or somebody else's intuition.
Yeah.
Which is really nice patient population to take care of. I have just lovely patients. I really do.
Well, you know, I feel the same way. And I actually credit that to the fact that about 10 years ago, I sat down when I was doing my New Year's visioning,
mm-hmm.
and the prayer came to me, you know, Spirit, you know, oh, great Spirit, please bring me the people that need the gift that
right.
I have.
Yeah. Exactly.
And let those that don't belong in my practice
find
the people that they find the people that they need, you know.
Yeah.
And it was quite wonderful, because bit by bit and in mm-hmm. pretty fast order,
right.
the people that really didn't belong in my practice
yeah.
disappeared, and the people that really
yeah.
needed what I do best
yeah,
were just
yeah,
started
I,
showing up.
I not
much
only
more
pray
satisfying.
For that. Yeah, I not only pray for that, but my surgery scheduler prays for that, and my supervisor prays for that. We have the group prayer for that. It's really interesting, but it's so true that I once was in a group practice, and I took care of my the other two plastic surgeons when they went on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
I took care of their patients, and when they came back, I realized that had I had their patients for my patients, I would have wanted to get out of plastic surgery.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
And I realized very early, I think it was in the 80s, that that you really don't have competition as a plastic surgeon or any practitioner.
Yeah.
You have the patients assigned to you, and they will come, and then mm-hmm. the other ones go elsewhere, and that's just perfect. You know,
yeah.
it's just,
well,
you don't want all the patients out there.
That's absolutely right. And
it is.
And I have a firm belief that if each of us were saying that prayer,
mm-hmm.
that our practices would be full.
Right.
They would be full of people that really belong there.
Right.
And we would be able to do fabulous work, because the particular gift that you have and that I have would be perfectly suited to the people that made it in the door.
Right.
The other thing that I have is a really big list of practitioners that I refer people on to
mm-hmm.
for things that I don't do.
Right.
I don't do lymph drainage. I don't, you know, mm-hmm. I do visceral work, I do cranial work, I do emotional
mm-hmm.
work,
right.
I do energy work, but I, you know, I can talk to the cells of your body. We can have a conversation about what's going on,
mm-hmm.
But I don't necessarily haven't studied how to move the lymph. So I might move someone on to someone else if that is what
mm-hmm.
the body says it needs.
Sure.
Yeah. So one of the things that I talk about in full body presence is the cellular intelligence of the body
mm-hmm.
and the fact that every part of our body has an intelligence that's trying to get through to us with its own message. And when we're locked out of certain parts of our body because of past traumas, because of disease processes, because of whatever, you know, you spoke to the anxiety that comes with neurotransmitter depletion,
mm-hmm.
There's a quality of not being able to hear what that cellular intelligence of the body has to say.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're operating with only part of our system. I think of it as, you know, we grow up, you know, we're born, if we have a healthy delivery, we have everything on board when we start. And then bit by bit as we grow up, the world tells us, oh, don't feel angry, oh, don't feel sexual, oh, don't feel
right.
this, you know, don't be powerful, don't do this, don't do that. And then yet we get to our adult lives, and our adult decision-making requires that we have the very part of ourselves that we're mm-hmm. locked out of because we were told we couldn't have it. It wasn't good. You know, particularly in our culture, something like women being in their fully, in their power
mm-hmm.
or in their sexuality. Men having the tenderness in their
mm-hmm.
hearts. It's really kind of an interesting dance to watch in my trainings how people begin to come alive,
mm-hmm.
sort of regain places and parts that they hadn't had in a long, long time.
Yeah, it's especially during this lifetime, because this is at the end of an era, we have to become more balanced, androgynous, more balanced in every aspect, right brain, left brain, you know. But, you know, basically a lot of the work I see people doing is accepting or trying to even develop that part of themselves that is opposite of what they are, you know, were born with. So
yes.
The androgynous, you know, look at Michael Jackson, very androgynous.
Mm-hmm.
We have I'm part of a book called Goddess Shift, Women Leading for a Change. It's 42 women leaders in all fields of endeavor talking about their journey and how, mm-hmm. and, you know, many of them are in their 50s, obviously, because, you know, they're more at the end of their career, 50s and 60s and even 70s. But it's interesting to look at their stories and see the threads that run through them, how we had to actually just go into each of these fields and then blend in, become more very comfortable with the male aspects of our personality,
yeah.
balance everything, and then come back out and then show, the book really shows younger women how they can take power back if they need to. But, of course, you know, 40 years ago or 30 years ago, it was a whole different story. You know,
absolutely.
You had to be kind of, I was the first female through the female plastic surgeon through the military. So,
yeah.
you know, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a real challenge because I was guided every step of the way.
Yeah.
And so things that might have been a challenge, I just stepped over, you know, I just sort of, or stepped around rather than went head to head with.
I would echo your story. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, that things that should have been a challenge, Spirit just opened the door and said,
yeah.
here you go.
Well, a lot
Your
of it
boy.
Is not fighting. You know, when
yes.
people engage you to fight, just not doing it, just sort of realizing that your book talks about a limited perception. I was given, as a medical student, I was given to a vascular surgeon for a rotation, and he hadn't been given any female medical students because he was so prejudiced.
Yeah.
And so I tell the story in the book, in my chapter. And, you know, instead of getting mad at him or getting this or that or the other, I just sort of let it roll off my back. You know, I sort of understood that it was his field that was constricted, not mine.
Right.
And I wasn't really there to change him, although I think I did, you know, just like I'm fighting with him.
Right. And, you know, here's the other thing that you're saying to me right now that really strikes me. Is that you recognized it was not about you.
No, no.
You recognized it was about him.
Right.
And that's a very, very different thing than taking it personally.
You can't take it personally. There's too many assholes out there.
Yeah.
You just be unhappy all the time.
Exactly.
I don't have time to be unhappy the majority of the time, you know.
Well, sometimes my students will say to me, my advanced students, they'll say, well, you know, so-and-so is thinking such and such about you. You know, a beginning level student will
yeah.
say, what they think of me is none of my business.
That's right.
It's really, I do the best work I can, and what they think about it is really their own projection that they're working on, and it's not
right.
really any of my business. And so you're right on there.
Did you ever listen or read Michael Rice's stuff, Why Is This Happening to Me Again?
Yes.
He's just a wonderful teacher of this perceptual stuff that, you know, I guess it came from concept therapy because he was in concept therapy and then developed this whole thing of, but if anybody really wants to do the videos, he has a video and he has a book you can download too.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole thing of perception and
mm-hmm.
understanding that you do not even perceive what's out there yourself. I mean,
yeah.
you and I both, I mean, even though our perceptual awareness is expanded, I mean, because we, you know, we can understand what the cells are saying and the energy flows and this, that, and the other, we are only still getting just a small part of what is there to perceive.
Absolutely, and the strength is in the fact that you and I realize that we're not seeing the whole
no.
picture.
Uh-huh.
I know that how I perceive the world is, you know, even though I might see it in a wider, more balanced way than the average person,
mm-hmm.
I still have my lens on it.
You do.
I absolutely,
absolutely.
Have my lens. And we all, as human beings, have mm-hmm. a lens. Absolutely. And that is, that's a fun, you know, in the, when I was putting together the five principles of full body presence, principle about expanding your perceptual lens in order to really have more of what you want, that was an easy one. Many, many people have been teaching that for years in different ways. Mm-hmm. Some of my early teachers were the Course in Miracles.
Yeah.
And different Taoist trainings where we sat with beliefs and thoughts for hours and let them go and watched them move and shifted and took someone else's point of view and tried it on and played it out, you know, and many, many systems now. And we're really, there's a lot available. I like Sherry Huber's book. She's got a very sweet book about There's Nothing Wrong With Me, I think is the name of the book. But it's a really great book for people who have a really strong inner critic.
Right, yeah.
So, and the way I work with it in full body presence, because I am talking about the body here, how can we really get more in our bodies, is I ask people to notice when they're caught in a limiting belief of some kind, I'm not good enough, I'm bad, I'm too much, I overwhelm people. I ask them to notice where they feel that limiting belief in their body.
Mm-hmm.
And always there will be somewhere in the body where there's a clutch or a fire burning or a feeling of something ready to explode. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes there's a numbness. There's nothing at all in that corner. And from there, then we work with it at a sensation level. You know, and I'll often say, could you be open to the possibility that that belief, even though you have years of experience that it's true, could you be open to the possibility that that belief is not true in this moment? And what would it feel like in that tight, clutched place if you could hold that possibility in your body? So, for instance, someone who feels like they're bad, you know, that they've been told over and over as a kid that they were stupid or wrong or bad or whatever it is, I'll say, just hold what you imagine it would feel like if you were a pleasure. If you were a pleasure. And inevitably the tears will start to roll down their face as the tissue, and I'll say, what's it feel like inside as you hold that? And they'll say, I can't hold it for too long. Initially, they can't. But it feels warm. I've never felt warm in here before. You know, I'm feeling softness. It's starting to, it's like I'm getting more space between my molecules. You know, I've never had that before. And then that breaks the cycle, and they can start to play with what would happen if you could expand your lens around that and really feel what it would feel like. So I have fun with that one. And then the other principle of integrating life's energy into all your cells that I spoke about a few minutes ago, how every cell of our body has something to tell us. And when we're locked out of anything, it's eventually going to handicap us in some way. Because the body's intelligence is meant to work all together, just like a car. You wouldn't drive a car with half the engine missing.
Right.
And yet it's not unusual for people to come into my workshops and not be able to feel the lower half of their body or the upper half of their chest or the left side of their body or the right side of their body. I mean, it's really, when they slow down and tune in, it is astounding how little body awareness most people in our culture have. And they don't even realize it because they're going so fast.
You know, some of my patients realize that everything that happens to them happens on, say, the left side of their body. and they say, why does that happen? I said, well, you know, it may be that your consciousness is not in that side of your body, you know, and that therefore it can't protect you. And you injure that side of your body, or you, you know, you develop problems on that side of your body.
Well, let's take it even a step further. If they're not living in that side of their body, their proprioceptive system isn't registering as acutely on that side as it is on the other side. So they will run into things with that side of their body. They're not even, they're not feeling that side of their body.
And
when you're not in your body, when you cannot feel what's happening in your system, it is, it does handicap us. And it particularly handicaps us in today's world because we really need to have all of ourselves on board for where we're going. I mean, I really, truly believe that, and you spoke earlier about what may be happening evolutionarily in short order. And I've read different people in that realm, and I tend to just put it down and say, okay, then I don't know whether this is true or not. What I do know is that my life works better when I am in more of the cells of my body. So that's, and actually that's why I did the audios that go with the book, because just reading a meditation, you can't read a meditation and be in
like
the meditation at the same
time.
So I and all of my work was initially through audio. You know, mm-hmm. I had all these different explorations for how to become friends with your body in terms of what you mm-hmm. eat and move and breathe and nature and other people. But the one that goes, the audio download that goes with the book, it gives the sort of the nuggets, the really golden nuggets of how to get back in your body and how to meet and hold and love the parts of yourself that you're locked out of. Because
right.
all of us have those places. I mean, mm-hmm. we're all on the journey.
Oh, yeah.
And I continue to work my way into deeper and deeper parts of myself as I go through life. Mm-hmm. And so that audio really just leads people step by step by step. And I'm here at Esalen Institute, and one of the premier Buddhist teachers, Dan Brown, is here, and one of his colleagues, Lama Podrin, is a wonderful woman. And we were sitting at dinner, and Lama Podrin, I had given her a copy of my book, and she thanked me, and one of our mutual students said, "Do you know, Lama Podrin, that most people won't make it all the way to Dan's and your training?"
Mm-hmm.
Because it requires hours and hours and hours of sitting and
right. yeah.
process. And she said, not only that, but the original Tibetan teachings didn't have any embodiment processes because the Tibetans were out working in the fields. They were
right.
embodied. By the time they came to their meditation process that gets mm-hmm. passed down, they were sitting there fully in all of their cells because they had been out working the fields. They had been,
mm-hmm.
you know, their culture was a much more embodied culture. She
mm-hmm.
said, now I have to do exercises. I go in the morning and do a whole 45 minutes or an hour of work with our students for embodiment, for opening the subtle channels so
mm-hmm.
that we can more deeply do this tradition that Dan and I are bringing. And their Lama was with them also from Tibet. But she said, we have to, even for us in these higher states of consciousness, we can only go so far if you're not embodied. And
that's
and so
true,
we've
yeah.
added this to our training, which I found to be fascinating. So it appears that everyone is coming to this realization that, yes, it's important what you think. Yes, it's
mm-hmm.
important what you eat. Yes, it's important what we do with our environment, but even more than that, we have to be in our bodies in order to know how to navigate in the world today. Why?
Well, I'll tell you something that I noticed in surgery. We do surgeries for sometimes 17, even 20 hours straight. And I used to do them like 7 days a week. I was just crazy operating all the time. And I would, after a surgery, when you're not in your body when you're operating, your consciousness is in the patient, and
right.
all your intention is in the patient, because what we're doing, at least at times, is fairly critical that we do it right.
Right.
So what it would happen that I wouldn't have to go to the bathroom, I wouldn't be hungry, I wouldn't do this, I wouldn't do that. But the minute I stepped out of the OR and hit the recovery room, I'd have to pee like crazy. And then all of a sudden,
amazing?
Like now, when I hit that recovery room, every muscle in my body hurts.
Yeah.
It's like all of a sudden I come crashing back into my body, and it's not a very fun place to be.
Yeah.
But,
you know, I wonder.
I'm 55, so, you know, I probably ought to slow down.
Well, you know, I'm 56, and I agree. Certain things definitely make my muscles ache, and I
yeah,
try
really.
To listen to them.
Yeah.
I try to listen to them. But I'm curious whether it would be possible for you to do surgery from an embodied place.
No, I've never tried it.
You know, I would be very, very curious. I would love to have a conversation with you after you've worked with the audio that goes with
yeah.
the book for and see whether, because my experience, particularly with the people that I speak with in my trainings that do things that are more out of body or expanded states, like people that are clairvoyant and psychic, they tell me that when they work with the skills that I teach, it actually helps their clairvoyance. It's like it adds juice to what they're doing, and they don't burn out because they are staying in their body, and they know if they're bent over in the wrong way, right there in the process, they get the signal to stand up a little straighter. It doesn't change what they're doing in the body, but they don't, you know, they don't end up with that backache. I'd love to have a conversation with you about this, because this is probably something that's pretty important for you.
Well, actually, all surgeons, you know, many, many plastic surgeons, by the time they're my age, have had cervical surgery. And a lot of the general surgeons I see are wearing the back magnet things, you know. Feet are a problem. I'm lucky that my feet aren't, but, you know, feet for standing for that long are a problem. So really, any, I mean, you've got a whole group of people that if you could really help them out.
Well, that would be, and, you know, I have to say, I was sitting here at Esalen. They do different programs that are just short programs for the community, and there was one on last Wednesday night, beautiful film about the gifts of grief, and there was a, it was the whole story of seven different people losing people, and what the gifts in that pain and that loss were for them, and after the film, it was a beautiful film, after the film, people in the room began to talk, and there was a pediatric heart surgeon, cardiac surgeon, in the group. And as this person and that person were sharing, well, my this died and that died, and this is what I got from it. And he just said, you know what? Lost my mother, lost my mother-in-law, lost my father-in-law in a three-year period. And he said, I have to say I have not been able to feel anything. And then he told us, I'm a pediatric cardiac surgeon, so there's so much on the line that I had to numb out. I could not stay in feeling, and so here I am, and this is exactly what I'm speaking to. Here he is in his life. Now he's handicapped emotionally, in that here are the major lineage of his life, and they're lost, and he has no way of feeling it at this moment. And my prayer for him was that that would begin to change, and maybe the film woke some things up for him. But I think that is, you know, if I, and I'm very excited, actually, I have two medical doctors, internists, who are have gone all the way through my training and are wanting to take this information to medical doctors, because they say, and I agree, I mean, it is absolutely paramount that our whole healthcare system begin to be more humane.
But why do you think doctors die so early? Statistically.
Absolutely.
They do. And they don't commit suicide. It's like dentists tend to commit suicide, which is interesting. That's very interesting. But and some psychiatrists do. But doctors just die in their, you know, often in their 50s or 60s of, you know, heart disease and other things, because probably they shut down the heart chakra.
No, that's my best
guess.
The
immune system, cancer, because they just don't take care of themselves. That's what I think. I mean, I think I look at how hard they work, especially now, because they're not getting paid, so they have to work even harder. And they're not getting paid like they used to. So, you know, it's just really interesting. They're like on a treadmill that they just have to keep going on.
And I see that also. And it is, and I think that they are sort of at the top of the food chain in terms of that. But what's happening is in the culture as a whole, everyone is working way too hard.
And that's true.
So we're seeing the same thing you're seeing in doctors, you're now seeing in the lay public. And so it's really kind of an interesting dance that we're in right now. And again, it brings us back to, can you get in your body? Can can I explain to people loud enough and fast enough, this is the way home? You know, this this is where we're born. This is where we're meant to live our lives. And all the signals from inside yourself that are there can't be read unless you're inside your system, navigating from inside your body. that's, you know, it is, I'm wondering how long it'll take for the change, but it's very fascinating because what's happened is that many, many, many people have picked up the book and have said, wow, this is what I've been waiting for. So there is also in the culture an understanding that this is needed. It's not Greek anymore. People really get it. I mean, just the fact that just in the last 2 years I've had two medical doctors come through and say, and I've had many docs across the years, but none that really got it strongly enough to say, I want to play here for quite a while. This is an important thing for us. Then it's happening. I have just a broad spectrum of different professions in my trainings, and they're taking it out to parents of special needs children, therapists with special needs kids, hospice, that whole system, the healthcare system at large. So it's exciting.
Yeah, you have to be able to maintain the, it's not just your body, but actually your energetic body too. When I was reading your book, you're maintaining the integrity of your energetic body when people and circumstances are pulling on it quite hard.
Yes.
Special needs child, I mean, that's going to be really a strong pull because a lot of those kids really can get in and zap energy from people. They just know how to do it. they might not be able to explain what they're doing, but they just know how to do it.
Absolutely.
And it was very interesting.
Well, and it's honestly, it's a survival mechanism.
It is, yeah. It,
and I don't begrudge them what they know how to do at all.
Right.
In the book, I talk about the mom that came into my workshop, and when she was a kid, she was a mom of a special needs kid. He just dragged her around by the nose.
Right.
You know, he would get upset and scream and yell, and she just came into my class so exhausted.
Yeah.
And it turned out she had a pattern from her childhood of pulling up and in and tightening down and not really feeling her feet and legs.
Mm-hmm.
And so that basic exercise I do in my beginning level training, put your feet on the floor, feel the earth.
Right.
What would feel most nourishing and nurturing? That question alone just gave her the heebie-jeebies. But she sat with it. She was brave. She sat with it. She managed that sense of, oh, my God, I'm feeling stuff I've never felt before. Her feet and legs got more life force in them. She got a flow moving through her body. And the fascinating thing was when she got back to her special needs child, he had one-third of the temper tantrums that he used to have without her actually changing anything in his external environment except her energy field. She was much more present, and she said to me later, she realized that he was probably screaming and having these temper tantrums, number one, as a way to manage his own sensory system, but number two, because she wasn't really fully present,
right.
And he wanted her to be fully present, so he was like, doing what he could do to get her to be there. It wasn't effective. It made her crazy. But he was doing the only thing he knew how to do, and he didn't have to do that once she was in her body and really fully grounded and present.
That's true.
It was a really lovely story because she went on to go back to school, and, I mean, her whole life changed once she was really able to be present in her body. And that little guy was bar mitzvahed this past year. It was
really
quite an amazing story. So, yeah, so it's a lovely thing to see. Because it's so simple. And what I feel like I've really done in this book is to put it in language that is simple, clear, and yet it has a profound, profound change in your experience of being alive once you really are in your body. So it's been fun. I really have loved writing it, getting it out, and watching how it's been received.
And I think it's also very protective. Used to be, I'd just get sick all of a sudden and not know where it came from or why.
Yeah.
And as I got more aware of my energy body, I would feel the energy go out of my throat. You know, I would feel the different areas that were about to act up. And then by doing more, being more present with them, sometimes I could reverse, you know, the and not get the illness.
That's exactly right, and that's exactly what I'm speaking to. So you, at some level, you are already doing what I'm talking about. Because when you're in your body, the body signals you, hey,
right.
You need to go get you need to go get a massage.
Yeah.
You need to lay down and take a nap. You know?
Exactly. You need to sleep tonight and not try to work.
Yeah, exactly. You need to. And for those of us that are really inspired by what we do, that is, you know, I really love.
That's before too. You're getting up at six every morning.
It was so funny. I was speaking at a conference where Joan Borisenko was also speaking probably 10, 12 years ago. And she was part of a panel for women and taking care of ourselves. And she did this wonderful piece where she said, guess what I did this afternoon? I went to my hotel room, I laid in the bed, and I looked at the wall.
Right.
And we all laughed, and she says, I didn't turn the television on, I didn't paint my nails, I just got into bed, I got horizontal, and I let myself look at the wall. Mm-hmm. And we were just roaring, but there was also this quality where everybody realized how few times we actually slow down and do that, and how restful, I mean, you know, you're a doc, you know what that does for the immune system.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
It really helps it to rejuvenate, to open, to refill. And so it's so important to learn. I say that what I do when I'm teaching people what's on the audio is I teach them how to slow down time and pay attention to details that we would normally go right on by in our busy lives. And it's kind of fun. And I say, okay, we're going to enter magic time, you guys. We're going to slow down time. You know, and then what is it? Just invite your curiosity on board here and leave your judgmental mind outside and notice what it feels like to inhale and exhale. You know, notice what your sitting bones feel like on the chair. And, you know, I just really allow the person to begin to explore their own system. I don't tell people what to find in their own bodies. I just ask questions that get them in the territory. And then I let them feel what they feel in raw data, just direct sense experience. Is it warm or cool? Is it dense? Is it spacious? Does it have a wetness or is it dry? Mm-hmm. Oftentimes when I'm sick, like really sick, like I have the flu or something, I'll go in and do this technique, and I just go into the area of the body that feels the worst, and I'll say, okay, wet or dry? Do you want water? Do you want me to go sit in the sauna? You know, and then I'll say, do you want warmth or coolness? I mean, I just go to very basic sensations, and the body will tell me.
Right.
You know, we need rest, or we need to be upright. We can't lie down anymore. You know, that kind of thing. So,
And acid alkaline balance is really important in disease too.
Absolutely.
You know, so you need to pay attention to what your body's telling you to take in. You know, what kind of foods and what kind of drink. To take in, and like in my case, I sometimes take buffer pH or something to, you know, to shift the alkalinity of the body, and that really has a big effect on disease organisms, you know, whether or not these little suckers are going to grow or they're going to...
If the pathogens can get a foothold or if they can wash right on out.
When they first get the first foothold, if you'll change the alkalinity of you, become more alkaline, they often can't continue to devastate the area, you know?
Yeah.
And so, but that would be another thing that you would, you know, if you were in that state where you could be guided one way or the other, then
absolutely.
You could probably do something to at that minute. You know, an hour later, you might not be able to do it. You know, it might be past the point of the magic point.
And, you know, I had a very pointed experience of that two winters ago. I had a really bad flu bug, and I ended up months later with pericarditis.
Yeah, I've had that.
Woke up in the middle of the night. I had no idea, except all I knew was I couldn't breathe.
Right.
I mean, it was painful. Well, that was what was interesting. See, I didn't know I had pericarditis.
Yeah.
All I knew was
I'm lying
in bed going, am I having a heart attack? Now, my husband's an acupuncturist, so he read my pulses. He said, your pulses are strong. And I said, no, I don't think I'm having a heart attack. And my body said, sit up. And lean forward.
Exactly. That's
and
exactly
I had no idea why my body was telling me. And I'm not a medical doctor, so I didn't even know I had pericarditis, much less that that's what you do with pericarditis, that you lean forward. It takes the pressure off the pericardium.
You're better, that's
and he worked on me. He worked on the meridians, and he worked on my system for about two hours, got me completely out of pain. I was able to lay back down and go to sleep. And then, you know, I went in and got it checked out by the cardiologist and the ER, and they said, you know what, whatever he did, it took it out of its acute stage, take some anti-inflammatories, but clearly you had pericarditis. But there was my body
telling you what
to
do.
Yeah, it knew exactly what to do, even though I had no idea.
Well,
so I want to say to your listeners that even if you're not a medical doctor or you're not a craniosacral therapist, your body knows what it needs, and it will tell you under those kinds of circumstances. It'll give you direct orders, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Lie down, sit up, breathe, drink water, get to warmth, cool down, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It will let you know if you know how to drop in and listen.
It will.
Yeah.
Well, I was a medical student when I got it, and I had the advantage of knowing that I had been taking care of a patient a few weeks earlier with it, so I knew I was exposed. And my mind told me, get up, get your stethoscope, and listen.
Yeah.
And I had the pericardial rub, but that's really important in some instances to get that emergency treatment so that you don't you don't pass out or otherwise have to be taken to the ER in an ambulance. And it's great your husband was able to balance that energy. That's very I've brought doctors over from China and they've been able to get their green cards and everything. So we very much understand how wonderful acupuncture can be, especially when there's an area of your body that needs energy. It's really very important. Well, we're coming to the close of our hour. Would you like to give some contact information?
Absolutely. People can go to my website at Full Body Presence, presence.com. Mm-hmm. And my name is Suzanne Scurlock-Durana, and I am available through that. There's contact information on the website, fullbodypresence.com, and the book is Full Body Presence, Learning to Listen to Your Body's Wisdom. If you're out here in California, you could come on up to Esalen on the 25th of July and take the four-day workshop that goes with the book, and it's quite a lovely place to do that. And there are many other places that we teach and different kinds of classes on the website and different things that are available to people. There's a free 5-minute exploration for dropping in and relaxing and tuning into yourself if you want to just go there and try that out. So I really have loved this hour, Dr. Cole.
Yeah, it's been fun. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today. I have a few announcements before we close. Next week, we're talking to Kathy Carlander, Discovering the Essence of Your Soul, Learn How to Facilitate Your Spiritual Growth by Accessing Your Akashic Records. And then on the 31st, Peter Zuban is back. We had interviewed him before, and we're talking now about the new true infinity. On the 7th of August, Brigitte Mars will be speaking with us about the sexual herbal. And on the 14th of August, Hilary Romero, Bridging Dimensions. So this is very important right now as we're coming up on the end of an era, the end of a timeline, and the beginning of another one. And then on the 21st, Dr. Teitelbaum will be back. He's a fibromyalgia expert. Beat the Sugar Addiction Now. Next, in August, the Noetic Science Meeting is the third Thursday. I don't have the exact date because I'm looking at July rather than August, but we'll be showing a DVD. We interviewed Dr. Amit Goswami on the quantum activist, and I thought it was good enough to show at our Noetic Science Meeting. And that will be at the Dunwoody office the third Thursday of August. If you want to receive the newsletter, please go to www.templeofhealth.ws and look under Plasticos, and the newsletter's up, as are the archived radio shows for the last few years. If you're interested in the radio shows from previous years, we have 2 or 3 years up at radiosandysprings.com under Temple of Health. Well, we've interviewed today the author of Full Body Presence, Learning to Listen to Your Body's Wisdom, Suzanne Scurlock-Durana, and she is out at Big Sur now teaching, and I'm sure her teaching schedule is up on her website. And it sounds like it would be good not just to buy the book, but actually to get some workshops with you as well, teachings with you.
Well, that would be delightful. I would be really would be wonderful to have any of your students in my classes.
Great, great. Well, thanks a lot. We appreciate you taking the time, and we will be back next week with Temple of Health.